Gati means the destination where we want to go. But the ultimate goal is Krishna, although people do not know it. One who does not know Krishna is misled, and his so-called progressive march is either partial or hallucinatory, in other words, imaginary. There are many who make as their destination different demigods, and by rigid performance of the strict respective methods, they reach different planets known as Chandraloka, Suryaloka, Indraloka, Maharloka, etc. But all such lokas or planets, being creations of Krishna, are simultaneously Krishna and not Krishna. Such planets, being manifestations of Krishna's energy, are also Krishna, but actually they serve only as a step forward for realization of Krishna. To approach the different energies of Krishna is to approach Krishna indirectly. One should directly approach Krishna, for that will save time and energy. For example, if there is a possibility of going to the top of a building by the help of an elevator, why should one go by the staircase? Step by step. Everything is resting on Krishna's energy. Therefore, without Krishna's shelter, nothing can exist. Krishna is the supreme ruler because everything belongs to him and everything exists on his energy. Krishna, being situated in everyone's heart, is the supreme witness. The residences, countries, or planets on which we live are also Krishna. Krishna is the ultimate goal of shelter, and therefore one should take shelter of Krishna either for protection or for annihilation of his distress. And whenever we have to take protection, we should know that our protection must be a living force. Krishna is the supreme living entity, and since Krishna is the source of our generation, or the Supreme Father, no one can be a better friend than Krishna, nor can anyone be a better well-wisher. Krishna is the original source of creation and the ultimate rest after annihilation. Krishna is therefore the eternal cause of all causes. I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place, and the eternal seed. Namo Vishnu Vidaya, Krishna Vishaya Vipadaya, Shumatari Bhaktivinoda Swami, Shumatari Sarasvati Vidaya, Gauravani Vasami, Nivashesha Sanhavari Pashtakadaya, Shabharma. So you're talking philosophy, chanting, dancing, feasting, philosophy. Okay. So philosophy. So philosophy, one aspect of philosophy is a natural human tendency to want to see how things are unified, to see the unity of everything. Even non-devotees, I'd say in most cases, modern scientists, for years and years, they're having a big problem. They want to understand the unity of everything, so they're positing and saying Big Bang. But then in order to sustain this theory of Big Bang, that you know what Big Bang is, it's been going on for years, and it's a very shaky thesis, in order to sustain it, they need to create unity. They need to be able to combine, because they're saying that the basis of everything is an explosion, Big Bang. It's a little different from what we're hearing in this verse of Bhagavad Gita. And so they have a problem that in order to uphold and sustain the theory of Big Bang, they need the input of both relativity theory as well as quantum mechanics. Quantum theory. And the two are incompatible. So aside from not being able to sustain this amazing idea that the basis of everything is a big explosion, they also have a big problem in that even in terms of their own frame of reference, they can't unify everything. But as devotees, as it says in Srimad Bhagavatam, param satyam dhimahi. There's many reasons to worship Krishna. He's all attractive. That's a nice reason. Krishna just gave a whole list of reasons. Every one of these is a good reason to surrender to Krishna. But very succinct statement at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. I worship him because he is the absolute truth. So that is, so as Vaishnavas, as real theists, we have a much easier time of it, you might say, to be good philosophers and to be able to see how things tie together, how everything is unified. So we'll keep that in mind in a few words, in a little few minutes I have time to speak. So why is this a good strategy for ultimate success, worshipping Krishna, besides the fact that he's the absolute truth? Why is this a good strategy? Because worshipping means that we're taking shelter. There was a song, you remember, some of you, in the 60s, give me shelter, give me shelter, give me shelter. It was a rock and roll song. So everyone is looking for some shelter. Everyone's doing this, whether they know it or not. This is the thing. Even modern scientists, Prabhupada points out in a purport in Bhagavatam, that they're actually, in one sense, the modern scientists, they're taking shelter of Durga Devi. Now, if you told them that, they say, what is that Hindu mythology? What? I have nothing to do with that. But yes, that's, if we see it from a philosophical point of view, a logical point of view, that's what they're doing, because they're dedicating Vyavasyatmika Buddhi, they're single-minded in intelligence as much as possible within the material energy, and they're focused on matter. That's Durga. They spend all their time. We can say everyone is taking shelter of something for no other reason than the clock. As we know, New Year's Eve is coming. You have that image of a Father Time with a big scythe. That scythe means a big, like, knife, you know, coming, cutting. So just the fact that tick, 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 every moment time is passing means that I'm worshipping something, I'm taking shelter of something, I'm surrendering to something just because I'm surrendering my time. I don't know if you catch this point. In other words, even if we're just materialists and we're trying to take shelter of sense gratification, but in one sense we are taking shelter of it because we're giving our time, we're surrendering to it, surrendering our time, surrendering our focus, our intelligence, what we're fixed on. So everybody is taking shelter of something, but most people are doing it unconsciously, unphilosophically, carelessly or whimsically. And they're not even thinking, what am I really taking shelter of? So the result of trying to shelter ourselves in objects or people who are themselves requiring to be sheltered is bound to disappoint us. In other words, like Durvasa Muni, he tried to ask Lord Shiva or different personalities to get rid of the Sudarshan Chakra that is about to kill me. So they couldn't. They said, we can't do anything like that. Mm-hmm. Well, we were just hearing in Srimad Bhagavatam in the morning classes here how Shatadanya was trying to get shelter. He went to his accomplices, Akrura and I forget the name of the other. What was it? Loud? Kritavarma and Akrua. And he said, we're not messing with Krishna. He's too strong. He's the Supreme Lord. You can't do anything. If he's after you and he wants, if Krishna wants to kill someone, no one could protect him. So it doesn't work. If we're trying to take shelter in a person or an energy that itself requires a further shelter, it becomes either an infinite regress or at least very disappointing. The psychology beyond the universal tendency to take shelter, consciously or otherwise, of the non-absolute is very simple. We're able to live out the fantasy, like playing a video game, that we are the manipulators, the controllers, independent enjoyers. The disadvantages are serious. For instance, we hear in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, we hear that for a while, Kamsa was speaking Atmatattva. He was a demon, but he knew Atmatattva, and it sounds contradictory. This was after he had that encounter, again mentioning Durga Devi, Yogamaya, Durga Devi. She appeared, and he was trying to bash her like the other children, and she just expanded and showed something of her actual form. And Kamsa, he really came to his senses there for a while. He was speaking very good philosophy, and not only that, but he became very humble, and he was begging forgiveness of his sister and his brother-in-law and for all the atrocities, and he got quite philosophical. And then, being a kind devotee, Vasudev, he responded to Kamsa's very cultured presentation, and he said something, a very interesting verse, Harsha Shoka Baya Krodha, what is it? Loba Moha Madanvitaha. Itognan tam na pashyanti bhaver bhavam kritagdushaha. It says, people with a vision of differentiation, they're always afflicted by harsha, shoka, baya, krodha, you know these words, and happiness and lamentation and fear and dvesya, envy, and what else? Greed, illusion, madness. They have all these afflictions, all these confusions. Why is that? Because they spend their whole life constantly trying to counteract the immediate causes, not being aware of the ultimate cause, which is God, Sri Krishna, the cause of Ishvara, Padmakrishna, Satchidananda Vigraham, Anadiradi Govinda, Sarva Karana Karanam, Brahma Sangita, what Brahma confirms. He's the Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes. So if we're just busy all the time trying to deal with immediate causes, and we're not actively, all of you are, so it doesn't apply to you, you're actively trying to take shelter of the ultimate cause, the ultimate cause of all causes. Otherwise, this is called the vision of differentiation. One is seeing things separate from Krishna. He's not seeing this whole train of causes. It's not that we have to analyze, because it's an unlimited chain of causes, like domino theory. It just keeps going. We just have to accept from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and the words of Krishna himself, as we're hearing in tonight's verse, that he's the basis of everything. Atat paratanam nanya, kinchit asti dananda. There's no truth superior to me. It may seem that Durga, or that the material energy, is the cause of everything. And in Bhagavad Gita, yes, it says that the material energy is the cause of all the causes and effects in the material world. But ultimately, maya dakshina prakriti. So the material energy is working under my direction, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. So the cause of all causes, that's worth taking shelter of. Otherwise, kuntha, the very nature of the material energy, is filled with anxiety. It was Henry David Thoreau, just paraphrasing, he said, the average man lives a life of quiet desperation. They may not show it, or even still ourselves to a certain extent. Let's be honest with ourselves. We try to keep a stiff upper lip and show ourselves we're doing very well. But inside, we, even as aspiring Vaishnavas, we sometimes may feel a little desperate that I'm not advancing quickly enough, death is coming, I can't cope with even my practical life or my health or this or that. Isn't it? Maybe I'm the only one that sometimes feels that. I don't know. So shelter implies not only the use of time and focus, as above mentioned, but also means one's paradigm. In other words, one's goal, one's philosophy of life, whether articulated or merely implied by one's culture and values, reflects the source of one's shelter. In very simple terms, I always go back to this reference in Bhagavad Gita. It's so clear that Yanisha Sarvabhutanam Asyam Jagarti Samyami Yasyam Jagrati Bhutani Yanisha Pasyato Munehe. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. Be a sage. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, there are two classes of intelligent men. One is intelligent for just bodily comfort, sense gratification, and the other is intelligent for self-realization. So we can start off, you know, like analyzing different types of paradigms, different types of worldviews, different shelters, as essentially, at the end of the day, am I taking shelter of, you know, my senses and the sense objects, or an arrangement for such things, or am I taking shelter of at least gradual cultivation of self-realization and God consciousness? So this is something we all have to be very introspective about. So what I'd like to do now is discuss three general categories of taking shelter. Remember, Krishna says, Nivasha Sharanam Shuri, I am the shelter, I'm the goal, I'm the real goal in tonight's verse. So I'm going to read a short excerpt from this wonderful book. This is a copy I borrowed from having a senior moment here, folks. Anyway, I borrowed a book from a member of the community here. It's called Tattva Sandhara by Srila Jiva Goswami, but it's a translation and commentary by Gopi Paranadana, published posthumously. So actually, talking about shelter, this is called the ashraya, the ultimate ashraya, that shelter which is not needing another shelter, the cause of all causes, the absolute truth. See how things fit together? This is what we're trying to do, is philosophize it, putting things, how things fit together. So, in the context here in Tattva Sandarbha is discussion of that verse in 2nd Canto, 10th chapter, 1st verse, which goes through the whole list. I don't have time to quote. But it goes through a whole list that includes creation, sub-creation, the universe, in other words, sthanam, the maintenance, the liberation, Krishna Katha, the succession of manus. And ultimately, the last item on the list is called the summum bonum, which is called the ashraya, or the actual shelter. And that actual shelter is even the shelter of all the other items on the list. So, in that context, Gopi Paranadana Prabhu has commented as follows. The problem of correctly identifying the foundation of all existence is not a mere philosophical curiosity. On this question depends the very success or failure of human life. When otherwise intelligent persons fail to recognize their true shelter, they misdirect their lives to pursue imperfect goals. Many persons misidentify the adibodhika purusha, the material body, as the only ashraya, or shelter, and become materialists. Others worship the adidaivika in the form of various gods. You're hearing about that in today's purport. Unaware that these demigods are actually servants of the Supreme God. In other words, all these shelters, which are not ultimate, they all depend on some other person or some other cause or some other shelter beyond themselves. Now it gets interesting. And others become impersonalists and worship themselves, the jiva, the adhyatmika purusha, as the supreme. And we're not talking about worshiping false ego, worshiping the material body and the bodily conception of self. We're talking about real people who are self-realized up to that point. They're worshiping the real self. But that's also failure, as will be explained. All such persons who make up the vast majority of the human race fail to realize the potential of human life. Only a few are interested in discovering the ultimate ashraya. They are the most rare and fortunate of souls, and they should be informed that the best source of guidance for their endeavor is Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the whole thesis of Bhakti Sandarbha, of Tattva Sandarbha, that the Bhagavatam is the best support for taking shelter of the real shelter, the real ashraya for Sri Krishna. I hope you like that statement. I found it very powerful, powerful and succinct statement. So these three categories that Gopi Bharanatana Prabhu has described are also hinted at in the verse that just came three verses earlier, Yanadhyanina Chapyanye. Yatanto mamu pashati ikatpena pritakpena bohuda vishvato mukam, where it's described that there are others who are less than mahatmas. They worship indirectly Krishna. They worship the universal form, or they worship demigods, or they worship themselves. The same, interestingly enough, it's the same three, basically, that we were just hearing about. Three general categories of shelter, where people take shelter of, in whether or they overtly worship, like in the case of the demigod. Again, taking shelter may not be worship. One may be an atheist, but the atheist is also worshiping. For instance, they have a cult called Darwinism. It's a cult. It's like a fanatic cult. So the first shelter, that of the universal form, I don't know if I have it in the same order, but this would be not quite theistic, but rather pantheistic. In other words, this idea of worshiping nature as God. It falls short. Because Krishna is everything. If we're hearing Krishna is everything, we hear Samahatma Sadurlabha Vasudeva Savarn Iti, that Krishna is everything. But that has to be qualified. Achintya Beda Abeda Tattva, not just a beta, one with, but also different from everything. Bhagavad Gita 7.12, Vichayava Satvika Bhava, etc. Krishna says that in one sense I'm everything, but I'm not under the modes of the material nature, because they, on the contrary, emanate from me. So just only seeing that oneness, or seeing Krishna in nature, seeing you can only relate to matter, okay, so God is matter, or God is the universe, universal form. That's doesn't quite make it. What is it? Punam eva vishishyate. They don't know that in spiritual arithmetic, one minus one is still one. In other words, besides being everything, Krishna is also Krishna. He's not only, he doesn't get used up in being everything, and there's no, like I take this paper and I rip it up, there's nothing left. But when you're dealing with the absolute truth, Krishna expands into so many energies and entities, including ourselves, including our bodies and everything. But at the same time, he still remains Krishna. He still remains Bhagavan, Supreme Lord. So those who take shelter in universal form, or in general, the pantheists like Spinoza and other pantheists, they just see the oneness of Krishna with nature, but they don't understand that he's also different. In other words, he's also Bhagavan. He's also the Supreme Lord, transcendental to material nature. The second shelter, that of worshipping many gods or any god, or as Prabhupada says in the purport to 9.15 Bhagavad Gita, concocting some form of the Lord and worshipping that. That's another indirect theism. I mentioned the first one, pantheism. The other one is also kind of theism indirectly, but this is called polytheism. In Sanskrit, bhav-ishvara-vadi. Bhav-ishvara-vad. That philosophy that there are many gods, or one could take any one of the devatas and worship that as the supreme, him as the supreme, or her as the supreme. That's a polytheistic conception. And again, it doesn't provide ultimate shelter. Why is that? because she may punyamacho lokamra shanti after the results of worshiping demigod, you go to the pious heavenly planet of Indra, enjoy godly delights. But when the results of one's pious activities are finished, one falls down. And there are other angles of vision, how worshiping the demigods. This is described by Gopi Puranadana as taking shelter of the adidaivika person, worshiping demigod. The third shelter, and in the context of Srila Prabhupada's purports, we can say the lowest of the low. Why do I say that? Because he says the lower than the mahatmas are, or the devotees, are the ones that are worshipping the universal form, diverse in many, some other form concocted, or some form of the demigod, which the concoction is thinking that the demigod is the Supreme Absolute Truth, or worshipping themselves. So it gets interesting, the idea of worshipping oneself. I made a note in the Veda base to... There's a verse in Bhagavatam 257 where Prabhupada mentions this idea. I mentioned it the other day in class. Is ahangro pash, ahangro, it's more complicated, that word. Ahangro paho pashana. There's another syllable in it. Ahangro paho pashana. That's worshiping oneself as God. And Gopi Pranadana Prabhu mentions this as a third general category of what people take shelter of. This, there used to be a spiritual group in the 60s and called the I Am group, or Who Am I group, and a whole group dedicated to discovering who am I. It's a darn good question. Who am I? I mean, what am I? Am I this body? Am I what am I? So one gets self-realized. One has a certain level of accomplishment in that. And so he may take shelter of that, worshipping the self. Of course, that's not the ultimate shelter, because mamaivam sa jivaloke, we're all part and parcel of Krishna. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, the purport that Prabhupada mentions, that ahangro pashana, one of the places, is that Narada Muni is questioning his father, Lord Brahma, and he's kind of implied that Narada Muni was, that Lord Brahma may have seemed to be doing ahangro pashana, worshipping himself as God, because Narada Muni was kind of tempted to think that my father is God. But then he says that when we see you engaged in such rigid austerity, following such perfect discipline, then we wonder, there must be someone even more powerful than you, although you're so powerful in a matter of creation. This is intelligent. Of course, Lord Brahma was only too pleased with his favorite son, Narada, and he revealed, no, I'm not the Supreme Lord. In fact, I can't even understand completely the Supreme Lord, the very source of my birth, Lord Brahma goes on to say. So I made a comment in the Veda base. You can make notes in it. So regarding worshipping the Atma as the supreme shelter, I wrote the following. In other words, even if Narada might have assumed that his father was engaged in this type of meditation, ahangro pashana, still anyone meditating, even on oneself, cannot ever become God by such practice. Of course, Krishna is the exception, as we learn from the pastime of Narada's visits to various of Krishna's wives' palaces in Dwarka. Krishna would very properly perform meditation after rising from bed. And in his particular case, yes, he meditated on himself. But he wasn't trying to become God. Even in Krishna's case, it was proper for him to meditate on God. You're supposed to meditate on God when you wake up in the morning. Meditate on God. But what if you happen to be God? That doesn't apply to us, it applies to Krishna. So you meditate on yourself, it works. But he wasn't meditating on himself that he could become God. He already was. If we don't take the proper shelter, I have a slightly humorous note. I know you might call it black humor. Means like a little bit, how should you say, ominous kind of humor. But before that, I'll just read what I wrote here as the conclusion. Any shelter other than the actual Supreme Personality Godhead will fail to protect us. Sooner or later, we'll be forced to realize this. Example, Papa Hemingway, Ernest Hemingway. He was an example of taking shelter, in our Sanskrit, more technical terms, of the adibodhika person, or the material energy, and becoming an utter materialist. And it really worked well for him. He was rich and famous. Great combination if you want to enjoy the material energy. And there's a whole book about it called Papa Hemingway. His biography, he'd go to restaurants and arrange international flights and boats and get his friends together, and they would wine and dine together, literally. He liked to go to bullfights also. He'd go to Spain just to see bullfights with his friends. And in the restaurant, he was so famous, he'd come in, "Oh, Mr. Hemingway, we have your table all ready for you. How many in your party?" And he was enjoying like anything, and he was a real ladies' man, obviously. And it was going on, but then he had to kill himself at the end, and he had to destroy his body at the end of his life, because when he got old, he couldn't enjoy anymore. And he was so traumatized, he was so shocked by that, he was so appalled by not being able to be the supreme enjoyer anymore, that he just did away with himself, for his body. So he was having this mentality, Ishvaroham Ahambhogi, Sidoham Balavam Sute. We're almost done, folks. But he felt compelled to commit suicide in his holy initial. Okay. So the demigod worship, that so-called shelter, also fails. And all these shelters fail, worshipping ourselves, worshipping demigods, or just worshipping Durga Devi, in either deliberately, as they do in India, or by default, as in the case of the material scientist. None of these shelters either work. And what's going to be the result if we, here's the black humor, what's going to be the result if we don't take shelter of the actual summum bonum, which is the ashraya, the actual shelter of all the other apparent shelters? Krishna makes so clear in tonight's verse that he's the shelter, he's the goal, he's the basis of everything, he's the eternal seed, he's the witness, he's the most dear friend. What's the result? Well, our week would be where we have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, right? So Sunday will become sin day. Monday will become mourn day, M-O-U-R-N, mourn day. Tuesday will become, let's see what happens. What will Tuesday become? Tears Day. Tuesday will become Tears Day. If you don't take shelter of Krishna, it's going to happen, folks. Wednesday will be totally useless. Wednesday will become Waste Day. And we'll be so, like the material world is like a desert, and we're drying up in the desert because of lack of water in the desert. You know, we need water, and we can't find water in the desert. So Thursday will be Thirst Day. Okay, yeah, pretty good. And then, especially in Kali Yuga, which is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, Friday will become Fight Day. Fight Day. And Saturday will just be totally, by the end of the week, we'll be totally devastated. We'll be shattered. So Saturday will become Shatter Day. This, by the way, is from Captain Ram Prashad Prabhu, received by me September 4th, 2012. It's a silly one. 2012. No, forget. You think you're in the last year sometimes, especially in January and February. So when you get older, you forget you're in the wrong century. You're in 2012, Captain Ram Prashad was one of my students in Bhakti Shastri course in VIHE, and he's an amazing case of dovetailing. He preaches to his crew. He's the captain of big freight liners, and he does Harinam with devotees when he goes to different ports. I think he's still doing that. I'll have to check. Captain Ram Prashad Kijai. So the verse tonight is 9:18. I am the shelter. I'm just paraphrasing. I'm not going to take the time to look it up. I am the goal. I am the witness. I am the sustainer. I am the original seed. I am the basis of everything. I'm the most dear friend. This is all good reasons for worshiping Krishna, the absolute truth. So it's 6 o'clock. So I'm supposed to end now. But so everyone's free to go. But if someone has a question or a comment, I'd be very happy to make a brief response to that. Maybe somebody has a question, but you're afraid you'll be very unpopular if you ask the question. Everyone's hankering to get up to the next delicious phase of the program. I'll take one last look around here. Oh, look who's here. Satchinandana Swami. All right, I don't see any hands, so there's no questions. Oh, one question. Okay, one question is a lot better than no questions. Where is that question? Yes, Monty. We have to smash them. Well, we speak philosophically. It's kind of like neutral ground where, you know, a lot of people will think they're philosophical and will perk up to some sort of philosophical approach. So it's always a pertinent question to ask, you know, what is the goal? And if they say the ultimate goal is myself, you know, to realize, and they take some impersonal line of it, then... you know, you could start questioning them. What are you left with? If we're all God, if everything, then where's our shelter? I'm back where I started from. If it's just me. I mean, I know it's different ways you can approach it. It all depends who you're talking to. Sometimes just give them lots of prasadam up to the neck. But we could encourage that. You can say, yes, Our founder Acharya has taught that worshipping oneself as God, that's ahangopahopashana. That's a bona fide way. But it still has a problem and falls short. And there's different ways it can put it. You can also say, yes, Brahman, we recognize that is an aspect of the Absolute Truth. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. I'm sure you already do this. So, I'm not, I don't know. Probably not helping too much. Thank you all for your very kind attention. Jagadguru Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavad Gita Sadhguru ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Hare Krishna.